The first thing that I would like to bring out to you concerning the story of Joseph is that by age 17, he was hated. Joseph was hated, not for something he did, but actually for who he was and how other people felt about him. We find this in Genesis 37, 2 through 11. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah. Those were his father's wives that had been introduced into the family as being handmaids of his authentic wives. And Joseph brought his father their evil report. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. He made him a coat of many colors, and the King James margin says this word colors could refer to pieces. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Then we find that Joseph dreamed a dream, told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood around about and made obeisance." They bowed down to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, "Shall thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream and decided to share it as well. And told his brethren and said, "Behold, I've dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me." And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him, said unto him, "What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth?" And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. He had this sense that something important was going on. Now, he was with Bilhah and Zilpah's sons. These were Dan and Naphtali and Gad and Asher. So now we know who they were, but it doesn't tell us what evil they did that Joseph reported it to his father. Now, there's a lesson to be learned here. Joseph was not doing anything wrong here in this. The world teaches us to hate a tattletale. We always hate a tattletale when they're telling the authority something we did bad. This is where that comes in, you see. But reporting evil done and reporting it to a proper authority is a virtue. Sometimes a scary thing, but a virtue. If you are at work and somebody is stealing things, if you're working around medicine and somebody's taking drugs, this is just bad. This is hurting themselves and others, see. And so relating this properly. Now, you don't do this so that, you're to do it in humility. Don't do it to look superior to everybody else. And don't do it exaggerating the problem. I saw them, but you know, it probably happens all the time. So be careful. Careful with those things. Now, what we find here is that his father, of all people, Jacob, makes a surprising mistake. The mistake is favoritism. You remember favoritism with Jacob and Esau? His brother, Esau, was his father's favorite. Don't you think that would have just, come to his mind? That he didn't like it then? And not surprisingly, Joseph's brothers didn't like it now. Maybe what's even worse, he gave him a badge of favoritism. And this is that coat of many colors. The word for coat by itself indicates a long-sleeved and ankle-length outer tunic. Now, some of the people I read believe that this was worn by those who did not do manual labor. This might have been the source of some problem right there. Then, and others say, well, we don't know what the colors mean, and doesn't, you know, probably doesn't mean different colors, but it's made of different pieces sewn together, maybe decoratively or something. But we find colors are found elsewhere. I think I mentioned this morning, Judges 5:30. Have they not sped? Have they not divided the prey to every man, the head of a man, a damsel or two, to Sisera, a prey of diverse colors, a prey of diverse colors of needlework, of diverse colors of needlework on both sides, meat for the necks of them that take the spoil. So there's considered kind of a badge of I've taken the spoil from a conquered city. Then 2 Samuel 13:18, she had a garment of diverse colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. So we find that this concept of color, for the most part, you go back in time where dye was just very hard to get. Most clothing was just plain color, whatever it came from when you made, you know, wove the wool, or whatever the grain was that you were weaving. So Joseph was at the time the youngest of the 11 brothers, and the only son of Rachel, who herself had been the favored wife. I want you to think about being hated for something you didn't have anything to do. To be hated because of the color of your skin. You didn't do that on purpose, you know. And Brother Jeb Porter was telling us that he went to a school where there was thousands upon thousands in Southern California of people attending, and out of the thousands, there was like, it seemed like 10 to 20 Caucasian white people. And very often, he found himself hated for the color of his skin, or perhaps a lack of color. Let's recognize that this is not logical, it is not right, and it's certainly not godly. Here he was hated, even hated to death, for being the youngest son and for having his father's love. Now, normally, I would say normally, when someone recognizes that they're the favorite, they are just a spoiled brat. They recognize they can get away with anything. They can do what other people only wish. Joseph, and aside for this tattletale thing, which is not actually a wrong, we have nothing listed in the scripture that he did wrong. He's one of the few, if any, others that this is true of in the scripture. However, we can say very clearly that Joseph was a servant, and in this, he was a follower of God. He understood what it meant to serve and to serve out of love, not out of just obligation. We see he went over and beyond obligation. So in chapter 37, 12 to 16, his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. I'm going to show you a map in a minute, because they are down in Hebron, southern part of the country. And he goes up a big long trip, 50, 60 miles, up to Shechem. And that's where they were intending to go. And Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I, I'm ready to go. And he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren. Literally, see the peace of thy brethren, and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, down there in the south, and he came to Shechem. But they weren't there. And a certain man found him, wandering around saying, why, where? And behold, he was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? He said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And I have left off something here, but he said that they went to Dothan. All right, let's look at the map. Do you have a way to move the cursor on this? Yeah. Go down to Hebron, down there just a little south of the middle of the Dead Sea. And this map, and I can't give credit because I didn't check who made it, but you see the dotted things there. And the dotted line goes from Hebron up by Mamre to Bethlehem to Salem, which became known as Jerusalem, up to Ai to Bethel, and then clear on up to Shechem. So you see that? There you go. Very good. Then he weren't there, so he went another, perhaps 20 miles to go up to Dothan, to the upper left. All right? So this is, he's got one job, and that is to see how they're doing. So he didn't get to Shechem and say, I don't know what happened, so he comes back. He didn't say, Dad, that's a long way for your favorite son to go. Just to find out how they're doing. Don't you think we would have heard? You know? Well, it was far away. Of course he wouldn't have heard. So it is at Dothan where he meets them. I want you to think about having a true servant's heart. This is where you don't just do what you're told, but you accept the mission with the value of the one who gave it to you. So, you need to clean up this mess in your room. That involves something more than shoving everything under the bed, piling everything in the closet. Okay. It means organize things so that you have a clean room. But that takes a lot of work, a lot of thought. And this is the servant's heart, you see. This is why Jesus was to say that if you only do what you're told, say that you're an unprofitable servant. So the person who says, I want you to clean this room, and then he said, what do you mean by that? Well, sweep the floor. So you sweep the floor, and then you go sit down someplace. Well, no, things aren't straightened up yet. You didn't tell me to straighten things up. Well, if you only do what you're told, then you're a grief to the person who gave you the mission because they had an idea in mind. It's your job, if you're the servant, to ascertain best possible what that mission is, what that goal is. And then a true servant's heart goes the extra mile, or in this case, extra 20 miles, to find out what's going on. And this, to find out if they were at peace. All right, you know what's amazing, ladies? He stopped and asked for directions. How about that? Okay, he was stopped. There's a poor boy who seems to be drunk, wandering around this field, you know. So, anyway, what's going on with you? What are you seeking? The third thing is that after all that effort, and we're going to see, by the way, this servant's heart illustrated on in other parts of his life. So it's not just now, or just before he was so abused. But the third thing is that Joseph was abused. I want you to notice that he was abused because, first of all, he was targeted for murder. You know, when your unreasoning, prejudicial hatred leads to murder, you're way, way off track. You're not allowed to kill people. This is forbidden. You don't have the authority. This is just not for you. But he was targeted for murder for no other reason than for being his father's favorite and wearing that badge and having those dreams, like he designed the dreams, you know. This wasn't his vision of the future. This wasn't his five-year plan. This was, or as it turns out, a 13-year plan. This was just a dream that he was given. So he shouldn't have been hated for it. But he was targeted for murder. We see it in verse 20. Come now, therefore, they saw him coming in that coat. Let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we'll see what will become of his dreams. You hear that mockery? He's so high and uppity, he has the dreams of domination. We'll see about domination. Now, to be fair, he was defended by Reuben. Reuben was the firstborn. The other commentators are quite clear that this seems to be part of the responsibility of the eldest son. A grown man, but oldest, and having the responsibility. In fact, we're going to see him wondering what that does to him. But verses 21 and 22, Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hand. This is why he decided this, to deliver him to his father again. He was planning, whatever the situation was here, Reuben was only there for a little bit, and he was moving on to do something else. So after they calmed down, left him in the pit, he was going to come back and take him out. We find this in verses 29 and 30. And Reuben returned unto the pit, and he hadn't found out what had happened, that they had sold him. And behold, Joseph was not in the pit. He rent his clothes. He returned unto his brethren, and said, the child is not, and I, whither shall I go? What am I going to do? How am I going to face father? All you guys are sort of under my care here. Now, we have an additional commentary on what happened here and being put in the pit, because all those years later, they come and they meet with the master of the grain in Egypt. They don't know it's Joseph, but he can hear them, he can understand them, he knows who they are. And they seem to be getting into trouble, unrealistically trouble. They buy it, they take off with the threat that they can't come back unless, they have to leave Simeon. But they can't come back unless they bring Benjamin with them. And they're talking about how unusual this is, how nonsensical it all was. And they're saying, this is like being cursed. And so they're saying, Genesis 42, 21, 22, and they, the brothers, said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul down in the pit, when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. He was begging them, wasn't he? And Reuben answered and said, I told you so. Spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and you would not hear? Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. Now, that's a little better than what he said. He said, put him in a pit, which is not quite the same as not sinning against the child. But what a horrible picture that was. After Reuben left, they saw an opportunity, and he was sold as a slave. To sell your own brother, even though of a different mother. He was the only one of that mother, so nobody shared a mother with him. But sell him as a slave. Genesis 37, 24 to 28. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread. Put him in the pit. It's time for a break. We're kind of hungry now. They lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead across the Jordan and to the north, with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt, far, far away. And Judah said unto his brethren, I want you to listen. Joseph's ears in the pit listening to brother Judah, the last words he heard from his brethren. What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? What do we get out of it? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. He said, we can make something off this deal. That's all he was to them. And his brethren were content. Literally, they hearkened. They said, yeah, that makes sense. Then there passed by Midianite merchantmen, who are a subgroup of the Ishmaelites, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. So think about the last words that he heard. Judah calculating to sell him for profit. So he becomes a slave. He was the privileged son. He was the son who had his coat of many colors taken from him. And he becomes a slave. There is something in him that says, I didn't cause this. I didn't ask for this. In this sense, God has given me a path. And I am going to work hard at being the best I can be. I want you to envision the kind of character this man had. He's a teenager being kicked out of his country, kicked out of privilege, and became a servant. So he is purchased finally by Potiphar, who is described as the master, who is the captain of Pharaoh's guard. The translation there can mean Potiphar was the head of the slaughterers. If you get an idea, I don't know whether that was like the scary name for the guard. You don't want to mess with them. But he was Pharaoh's captain of the guard. Now, notice 39, verses 2 to 6. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. Master was Potiphar. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. He says, every job I give this kid, my stuff gets better. He reorganizes. He works this out. He gets it all set up. He's making me money, you know. And Joseph found grace in his sight, don't you imagine? And he served him. See that servant's heart. This is the man. I mean, think of all the grief that he could have thought up about this. You don't own me, you know. You're not my father. You can't tell me what to do. You haven't given me a coat of many colors. But he didn't. He served him. And he, in return, made him overseer over his house. And all that he had, he put into his hand. He says, everything I give him, he makes it better. I'm going to give him everything. He can run everything. He runs my finances. He runs my cattle. He runs whatever. And it came to pass from the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hands. Interesting turnabout here. And he knew not aught that he had. Well, how's your crops? I don't know. I have a guy taking care of it. How are your cattle and so on? I think it's pretty good. I don't know, but I got a guy in charge. He didn't know. And he knew one thing, the bread which he did eat. He sat down, and there was food, and it was put in front of him. And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. So he was maturing into a young man who looked pretty good. Joseph, though a slave, by serving, became the master of Potiphar's household. by contrast, Potiphar was Pharaoh's captain of the guard, but he became as a slave who didn't know what was going on except for the food put in front of him. You know? Change of position. Now, all of that, he's the successful guy. He's in charge of everything. He's the go-to guy. He knows what to do. He was decisive. But because he was good-looking, he attracted the attention of Potiphar's wife, who I'm guessing married for power, married for money. And you say, uh-oh, this messes everything up. Understand it from God's point of view. God was ready to graduate him out of slavery. How do you do that? How do you get out of slavery? Well, you get put in prison. You get ousted by Joseph, by Potiphar. And so now, again, he seems to be demoted. And what's his attitude? Joseph worked to be the best inmate. You can't keep this guy down. He says, well, I worked to be the best slave. Now I'm going to work to be the best inmate. So how did this happen? Well, Potiphar's wife lied to Potiphar about Joseph. Genesis 39:17-18. She spake unto him, she, the wife, talked to Potiphar, according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant, whatever his name is, which thou hast brought unto us, came in unto me to mock me. He wanted me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice, I was terrified, you understand, and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. The truth was, she kept after him. Finally, she grabbed him by the coat, and he slipped out of it and ran out of the house, telling her, your master has put me in charge of everything. Why would I sin against God and against him? He was taking a godly stand. Well, this is the second coat that he's lost, and looks like all of his well-earned and hard-earned service goes for nothing. Now he's in prison and he's nothing but an inmate. Many find it interesting, I'm among them, that Potiphar's reaction to this accusation was mere imprisonment. He was the captain of the slaughterers. Do you think it would have been a problem to kill a slave? Not in Egypt. But he puts him in prison. And by the way, and I'm thinking perhaps he understood more than she knew. There might have been a previous person that was giving him problems. Something I hadn't learned until I was preparing this, that the prison that he sent him to was connected to Potiphar's house. And Potiphar himself was ultimately in charge of it. This was a white-collar prison. This was the place where only Pharaoh's servants were kept. And Potiphar was in charge. This sounds like preferential treatment for somebody that was trying to get friendly with his wife. I don't think he bought it. But to be keep up appearances, he had to do something. Now, he's an inmate. And he finds in this young man someone that doesn't do anything wrong, finds that if you give him a job, he does it very, very well. He's the only one with a completely clean cell. You keep that pretty clean. I could clean the others if you want. I don't know what he said. But finally, the warden promoted Joseph. Chapter 39, verses 20 to 23. And Joseph's master took him, this is Potiphar, and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, extended kindness unto him, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison, the warden. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph, Joseph's hand, all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand. He says things are going better now than they ever were before, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. They were getting better results. There has to be something going on here. It was not just miraculous stuff and people started changing and the prison become better. The warden became like a prisoner, not having any duties, and Joseph was in authority over the whole prison. I like to think that he instituted prison reforms that helped keep the peace, reduce violence in the prison. When people thought there was somebody kind of on their side, and here's a fellow prisoner who seems to be doing well. And we have an example that he actually cared for the people that he was over. I wonder if Potiphar said, put this man in prison. And by the way, put him to work. Everything he does touches, turns to gold. I don't know. But we see then that Joseph counseled prisoners. He cared about them. Pharaoh sent his servants to prison, chapter 40, verses 2 to 4. Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers, and against the chief of the bakers. The candlestick maker seems to have escaped without injury here. And he put them in ward, under guard, in the house of the captain of the guard. We know the captain of the guard, don't we? That's Potiphar. Into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard, Potiphar, charged Joseph with them. By this time, he's in charge of all the prisoners, but he says, these guys are close to the Pharaoh. Keep them safe. If he brings them back up, they can't be damaged. So Potiphar himself charged Joseph with them. And he served them, and they continued a season in the ward, under guard. And not just did he get that authority, but he took it personally, the servant's heart again. We see that Joseph inquired about them in verses 5 through 8. And they, the butler and the baker, dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night. They both woke up and said, wow, what a dream. And he says, you too. Each man, according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, they were bound in prison. Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. So he kicked them and said, you lousy inmates. No. He asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward in the Lord's house, in Potiphar's house, saying, wherefore look you so sadly? Why are your faces evil today? You look uglier than you were yesterday. You have evil faces today. And they said unto him, oh, we have dreamed a dream, and there's no interpreter of it. And he looks at him and he says, Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. You remember the story that he actually told them, they told him the dreams, and they were very similar. And then he began to interpret them. And he uses the term, lift up your head, that Pharaoh will choose to lift up your head. Well, we find that it came true. The passage that explains this to us, Joseph interpreted their dreams in verses 20 to 22. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up, or reckoned, the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. Now, two different things happened, though. He restored the chief butler unto his butlership again. And he gave the cup, as a butler, he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. It was the baker who heard the good interpretation that his fellow servant had got, and he says, well, then here's mine. Tell me. So he had his head lifted up a little differently. He had it lifted up by a rope. But as Joseph had interpreted to them. And so the butler, the important character in this story, is the one who, with that recognition, that uncanny understanding, goes back with the promise, oh, yeah, I'll tell the Pharaoh, I'll tell him that you have this ability. And he doesn't say anything. But the next step is this. From slavery to imprisonment, Joseph became the head advisor to Pharaoh. What an amazing advancement. Talk about getting a promotion. Pharaoh had a dream. 41:8. It came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. It was too strange that there were seven good things, and then suddenly there were seven evil things that ate up the good things. These were animals, these were plants. Nobody could figure out what that meant. They looked through their dream books and nothing made sense. Then, when the news got back to the butler that Pharaoh is troubled and so on and wanting to be a help, by his words, he's not talking to Pharaoh himself, but he is communicating with somebody who will talk to him. The butler remembered Joseph's ability, verses 12 and 13. There was there with us in the prison a young man, a Hebrew, a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. To each man according to his dream did he interpret, and it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was. He restored me unto mine office, and him he hanged. That was just what he said. It all came true, just as he said. So they talked to their people and whatever, and Pharaoh interviewed Joseph. So Joseph is now called, comes down to probably Potiphar, who sent it to the warden, says, get him cleaned up, get him fit to stand before Pharaoh. So verses 14, 15, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily. Literally, they made him run. Out of the dungeon, he shaved himself, changed his raiment, and came unto the Pharaoh. That sounds almost as though that was his idea. I'm going to just clean up a bit before I go see Pharaoh. So he enters in, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret. I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it, or when thou hearest a dream, thou canst interpret it. He says, I've heard this of you. Now, if you're an inmate and you're getting a chance to impress the Pharaoh, what might you claim? You know? I want you to notice how careful he was, because Joseph gave God the glory right from the beginning here. Verse 16, Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. He's not in peace now, but I'll give you the answer that will put you at peace. So he tells him, God gave you the dream in two sections. It means that this is happening very quickly. It means you're going to have 7 years of prosperity beyond things that you normally have. But after that's going to come 7 years of famine that will be such that it could eat up all of the prosperity that you gained before. Now, he's not just finished when he gives the interpretation, because Joseph's practical side, we see next that Joseph's interpretation demanded swift action. And he says, well, obviously, that means something. Verses 33 to 37. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers or overseers over the land and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt. This is 20% in the seven plenteous years. Do this over 7 years. We can count on this plenty because God has advised you of it. And let them gather all the food of those good years that come and lay up corn, the word for grain, under the hand of Pharaoh, let him keep food in the cities. So he envisions granaries all over there with several cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not, be cut off through the famine. And the Pharaoh, blinking to grasp everything that's being said, looks around, and the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. What servants are we talking about here? The guy that dusts the floor? No, probably his advisors, people that are important, like maybe Potiphar, captain of his guard. Do you think he was there? Would that be interesting? And he looks around and he says, wow. I think that's a great idea. This is a good plan. So now Pharaoh, looking at his servants, Pharaoh appointed Joseph over Egypt. Look at verse 38 and 41. Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. He said, that's who you should look for, somebody who's discreet and wise. He says, you just proved yourself to be the most discreet and wise of anybody I've ever talked to. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. I love this. The word ruled here is to be armed or to kiss. They're going to bow and kiss your hand, you see. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, wow, you catch what I just did? See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. You've been promoted, kid. Do a good job. Well, he never had authority, admiration, appreciation, the ability to decide, and it was done ever before, not even as a favored son of Jacob. So we find that Joseph's position healed him of his afflictions. I had wondered what it was like to be Joseph in these times. Is he that holy man who is above it all and, oh, nothing bothers me? No, not at all. Actually, we find it in chapter 41, 50 to 52. Unto Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came. So in that first 7 years, he bore two sons. Pharaoh had given him his wife. He says, you'll like her. Her name was Asenath, and she was the daughter of Potipharah, who is called priest of On. I had kind of assumed, never checked it out, that On was some deity. They had deities to spare, but On is a city. And then I noticed that the King James margin here says priest or prince. It's a leader of the city of On. And this daughter, Asenath, becomes his wife, and she bare him two sons. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. That is the word forgetting. And he explains, for God, saith he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. See, up to this time, as a slave, every day he woke up as a slave, he remembered the loss of his father's house, the hatred of his brethren, and that he was working harder than he had ever worked as a favored son. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, that is fruitful, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. He didn't like being a slave. Come on. It was not his field of choice. But he said, if God gives it to me, I'm going to do my best. And he did. And this was God's plan. Well, up to this time, he now has been vindicated by God. He has risen above all of this, you see. But he hasn't been brought into God's plan, because God doesn't need to reveal his plan to us. But he has not yet been clued in to how all of this was to save Israel, his family. So now we find God revealed his plan for Joseph to save Israel. And this happens by, first of all, Joseph's brothers came to buy grain because this famine was spread further than just Egypt. Chapter 42, 3 and 4. Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy corn in Egypt, but Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure mischief befall him. So don't want anything to happen to this last remaining child of Rachel. With this, then, he takes the opportunity to pretend to be something he's not, or pretend to not be something that he is, if you see the difference. And so he looks like, I don't know, those weird eye makeup stuff, you know. He was a master of mascara now. And he looked like the Egyptians. He spoke Egyptian. And he's overseeing this. And he was there. And since they could have come, I guess, anywhere, God put them together here. He meets the brethren. With this, then, his heart longs to see his blood brother, Benjamin. He's never seen him, I think. And verses 18 to 23. Joseph said unto them the third day, this do and live, for I fear God. If ye be true men, the third day he kept them in prison, all of them in prison, for 3 days. This is basically just to show them he means what he's talking about, and he can do whatever he wants. He says, I'm going to keep you here. You send a messenger and go bring Benjamin. But as he thinks about it, it's going to tear his father up. That's not what he wants. So he says, okay, I have a revised plan. This do and live, for I fear God. If you be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. One, you leave one of the brothers here. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your house. Because he says, this isn't going to work because they're needing food. That's why they came. I need to get that to them. But bring your youngest brother unto me, so your words will be verified, you shall not die. And they did so. They said to one another, what's going on? We verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us. We would not hear, therefore is this distress come upon us. And Reuben entered, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and you would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And they knew not that Joseph understood him, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. He has speaking that Egyptian, they can't understand him, but he has an interpreter. He's playing the part pretty well. Well, then they bring Benjamin. Over a period of time, they bring Benjamin. And I don't know what he was thinking, how much of things changed since I was sold into slavery, because I was beloved, and here's a Benjamin who is obviously so well beloved that he wouldn't send him the first time, lest some mischief happen. Is he safe in that house? And so he determines he's going to keep Benjamin. He's just going to keep them and send them back. But somebody talks him out of it, and he does so by a heartfelt devotion. And of all the people that Joseph would listen to, it was Judah. That last voice he heard calculating to sell him as a slave. This one comes to him. So we find here that Joseph planned to keep Benjamin with him. And he planned that until Judah offered his life. Don't miss this. He said he was going to keep Benjamin as his servant, as his slave. Listen to Judah's words, verses 31 to 34. He says, if you do this, it shall come to pass when he, our aged father, seeth that the lad is not with us, that he will die, and thy servants shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant our father with sorrow to the grave. Joseph didn't want that. For thy servant Judah, he's talking about himself, became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, if I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. I'm not going to let this one go. Now, therefore, I pray thee, let thy servant, let me, abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord. Let me be your slave. Just spare Benjamin, and let the lad go up with his brother. For how shall I go up to my father, and the lad be not with me? For peradventure I see the evil that shall come on my father, that will find my father. He'll be devastated. He'll die of his broken heart. So this was the Judah that suggested selling him. Now he offers himself as slave to Joseph. And this broke Joseph's heart. So he said, excuse me, he walks out of the room and he just goes and weeps. Then he comes back and he forgives them. I think there's an important lesson here. He sought their good from the very first, but he had not forgiven them. He didn't know if they were really sorry for what they'd done. You can be ready to forgive, but you can only forgive when you're asked to forgive, when you can see the evidence. Now, they couldn't ask him for forgiveness because they didn't know who he was. They assumed he was dead. But now he forgives, because listening to these words, he heard their confessions and the guilt, and now he sees their willingness to act according to repentance, to act in love for this blood brother of his. They're not callous about this one. They didn't realize what it would cost their father when they sold Joseph. They didn't realize that. Now they do. It's not going to happen again. So we find then that Joseph reveals his identity and he invites the whole family to come down to Egypt where there's food. Verses 3-5, Joseph said unto his brothers, I am Joseph. He starts speaking Hebrew. I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled. Literally, they were terrified at his presence. What has happened? This stern man, this foreigner, this stranger, this Egyptian, is now, what, possessed by the dead spirit of Joseph? What's going on here? And Joseph said unto his brother, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. I know these things. Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves, having anger in your eyes, that you sold me hither. And he puts this interpretation, this new label on what they did. For God did send me before you to preserve life. I have an opportunity here, he says. I haven't told you the whole story. But there's 7 years of plenty, and now we're right into the beginning of 7 years of famine. It's not going to get better where you live. You're going to run out of food. Here we have the food. Verses 8-10. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. He begins to see the whole picture, doesn't he? Joseph begins to see the picture. Why? God's pretty smart. Yeah, he did all this because this famine was coming. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Haste ye, go up to my father and say unto him, thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not, and thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, that fertile ground right at the Mediterranean coast. And thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children, thy children's children, thy flocks, thy herds, and all that thou hast. He says, you'll be under my protection, under my guard, under my privilege. You'll be my favorites. Well, that story concludes then with them going back and telling this ridiculously fabulous story. And Jacob finally being convinced. And as he agrees to go, God steps in to Jacob and confirms his plan for the family of Israel. Look at verses 1 through 4 of 46. And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba. And he stops there and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And right there, God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. He said, here am I. He said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt. For I will there make of thee a great nation. Here is the reason that God planned the famine to take him to Egypt. This is where they will grow, where they will become strong, and from where he will take them out. And he promises, I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will surely bring thee up again. He didn't take him down there to forget about him. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. I think it means that when you die, you'll be in the arms of your beloved Joseph. Well, too many lessons to learn here. But yes, let's look at some. Take the hard times of life as God's plan for good to you and others. To be what Joseph needed to be, he had to learn the language and the culture of the Egyptians. This was best done under Potiphar's rule. He was right there in the leadership area, met people, knew people, fed them, you know. He knew what to do. God gave him the gift of dream interpretation while in prison to prepare him for a more important dream interpretation to come. Then God gave Pharaoh this bizarre dream to drive him to find an interpretation. Do you see how every step is just interlinked? Pharaoh's practical life in running Potiphar's household taught him what needed to be done for all of Egypt. Every step was a link in the chain to do the best for others. Then Joseph explained this to his brothers. Clear over in Genesis 50, verse 20. But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but our God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Let me encourage you to be a Joseph, then. Let us cooperate with God's plan for our lives and learn the lessons he has for us. They're ultimately wise, ultimately good. And if it causes us some trouble along the way, it's going to be worth it. Let's pray. Father, you speak to us of a life filled with some sorrow and affliction, showing how easily it is for you to take those very things and to build us up with it into something that you have planned for us. Father, Joseph was a person who was dedicated to you. He had that servant's heart. He was undoubtedly saved early in life and became close to you, understanding the background, the religious understanding handed down to him from Abraham on. And he knew what you were all about. We ask, Father, that you might help us then to be like him in that we will recognize that the things that are not in our control are not out of control. You're the one who controls it all. So you may give us a difficult task, but what you're asking of us is to do our best, to do the right thing, to take the right step, very next right step. And in doing this, you will bless us. You will make us to prosper in that which you've given us. Now we may not rise to a political level as Joseph did, because that won't be necessary for us. But you will accomplish your purpose with this person or that person that we'll contact. Father, help us not to act in such a way that later on in life we're embarrassed by what we said, embarrassed by how we handled, embarrassed how we treated people. Let us have that servant's heart that says, how can I help? What can I do to make things better? With heads bowed, eyes closed, is there one that says, Pastor, I have a hard time with the hard times. I kind of expected God to make things easy for me. I've lost people. I have been abandoned by people. But I see in Joseph's life, if I just trust, if I do the right thing, God's will work out for the best. That's what I want in my life. Pray for me. Would you slip your hand up and say, pray for me. I want to be like Joseph, going through the hard times of life. Father, how we thank you for this example and this perfect example of somebody going through difficult times and yet with your purpose spelled out for it all the way. Not revealed along the way, for we are to trust you. We're to walk by faith, not by sight. But Father, we learn in this that this is the important concept, to do it your way, to follow your path, to be guided by your word. And so we ask for each one here that we dedicate ourselves to you in this regard. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.